I'm Marco Werman, and you're listening to The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH Boston. After the war in Vietnam ended and the Americans pulled out in 1975, the country was in turmoil. Hundreds of thousands of people fled, mostly by boat, over a decade or more. The Vietnamese boat people, as they became known, refugees looking for safety. We're going to spend the next part of the show with a story from that time and about the woman who went back to where she landed after escaping Vietnam. Her name, Karina Hoang. She was 16 when she fled with her younger brother and sister. They wound up on a remote island in Indonesia called Kuku, where the hardships were extreme. Yet Karina Hoang has returned to Kuku many times. Liz Mack reported this story for the podcast Snap Judgment. So tell me a little bit more about Karina, Liz, and how you came across her story.
Yeah, she's this pretty remarkable woman, incredibly strong. And I actually found her because she's a special representative for the UN, Australia for UNHCR. And you can see that she really came out of this traumatic experience all the more resilient. She's also really kind and has a lot of empathy, which I think explains some of the work that she's been doing for the last 10 years. But back in 1979, she was just 16, in charge of her younger brother and sister.
What was it like when the three of them arrived on this remote island?
Karina told me that she had been told that they were heading for a refugee camp. But when they actually reached their destination, she remembers she saw this moon-shaped island with a beach. And when they got out of the boat, there was basically nothing there.
And we looked around. It was a jungle. We didn't see any shelters, any huts, any camp. It was just an island with trees and bushes, and in front of us was the ocean. That's not a refugee camp.
Yeah, that is not a refugee camp. So what was there on the island?
So Karina's boat was actually one of many refugee boats to arrive on that island in June 1979, but she was one of the first. So when she arrived, there was pretty much nothing there. There were no people, no buildings. They were on their own.
No one came back, no words from anyone. By the third day, people started to realize that maybe this is where we're going to be staying.
They had to fend for themselves. Early on, the refugees on the island, they found a creek, and people learned how to fish. They hunted lizards. They even learned how to pelt bats with slingshots. Karina had actually brought packets of ramen along with her, and she used to break one packet into four corners, and she and her brother and sister would share one corner among the three of them for each meal.
I mean, it was pretty clear during the fall of Saigon that elites would likely find their way out of the country on the final planes out of the airport. Everyone else pretty much had to fend for themselves. And then there were these boat people. But I thought they were sent to places like the Philippines and Guam. I mean, how did they end up on this island?
Karina says that they're hoping that they would land in Malaysia or Indonesia. They actually landed in Malaysia first, and they got robbed by the authorities and pushed back to sea. So when they landed in Indonesia, they sank their boat so that no one could push them back. And the authorities told them, well, we're going to send you to another island where there's a refugee camp. And then they ended up sending them to Kuku, where there was nothing.
Eventually, food supplies are going to run out. What'd they do then?
Yeah, I mean, I think they were starving for a lot of the time. You know, you scrimp and figure out whatever you can. There's the fish, there's the lizards. Someone actually told me that although they were alone and stranded in this island, there were nearby islands where there were actually indigenous fishermen. So they actually began to start trade. And they would give them the jewelry that they had brought with them in exchange for fish or fruit or medicine.
I mean, it sounds kind of like the Swiss Family Robinson, but I gather that people started to get sick pretty quickly after they arrived on this island.
Yeah, people really suffered. They caught malaria, diarrhea, they were starving. And Karina thinks it was after the first 10 days on the island that people started to die.
We haven't been eating for a couple of days, very little drinking water. My sister and my brother just lay there like dead bodies. They just whispered and they said, I'm so thirsty, I'm so hungry and so weak. Many times I thought we're not going to make it.
So Liz, what did happen? Did her sister and brother survive?
They did. After 3 months of surviving on their own, the Red Cross showed up. And then so did the UNHCR, which set up a refugee camp, a proper refugee camp on Kuku Island. So they all survived. And then after 5 months of continuing to be there, they were moved off the island.
I'm really curious, with such a traumatic experience, why would Karina Hoang decide to go back to Kuku?
yeah, that interested me too, because I think it takes a very particular person to want to do that. So actually, it's interesting. Back in the mid-1990s, her aunt, who had also fled Vietnam and been left on an island nearby, she asked Karina to go back to find the grave of a cousin who was one of the people who died there. So I think Karina was really motivated to do it on behalf of someone else because she saw that her aunt had never really gotten closure. And once she did that, then other people asked her to help them too. But Karina says it's been really hard. It's still really difficult to get there because it's so isolated. Logistically, it's incredibly complicated, and she has to arrange things with the local governments and plan for months in advance. Nobody pays her to do this, and it takes an emotional toll too.
It's been 10 years almost since I returned, and after so many trips, I felt draining. It's time for me to stop. So, yes, this will be my last trip back to Kuku Island.
So, recently Karina made her very last trip to Kuku to help another family find a grave of a relative who had died on the island. And I went with her.
All right, Liz Mack with Snap Judgment. Thanks very much for the setup. Let's hear the rest of your story.
Oh, this way, this way. Hi, this way.
Tell me where we're going right now. What are we doing?
We're going to Kuku. We're going to Kuku Island to find my father's remain and grave.
How do you feel right now?
I'm feeling anxious. Okay. But it will be interesting. You know, I'm going back to the place that I left 39 years ago. Yes.
This is Tony Liu, easily the most eager person on Karina's last and final trip to Kuku Island. He's here with his 77-year-old mom, Drung An, and his brother, Daniel. Tony was only 18 when he said goodbye to Kuku and left his father behind in a shallow grave. Now he's almost 60. He tells me that in all this time, he's never talked to a single person about what happened there or about how his dad died of malaria on the island.
I never thought he could die. And so I never want to talk about it again. I never want to even remember about it. And I try to learn how to forget.
And then he tells me something that takes me completely by surprise.
I was the reason why he died.
Tony says his dad didn't have to leave Vietnam. But Tony was 18, and his parents worried that because of his age, he could be forcibly conscripted.
They would send me to labor camp, or they would make me join the army. He decided to leave because of my future.
For Tony, Kuku was the place that broke his family, and he never wanted to come back.
But I know I have to do this. It's just me that I feel like I don't have the courage, don't have the bravery. That bothered me.
This is it. On this little sand beach you see here.
This is it. Kuku Island. As we pull up, it's everything Tony and Karina said it would be. There's palm trees that sway back and forth. The clearest water. But the jungle looms over everything. People actually had to survive here. Ever since we saw Kuku in the distance, and even now as we step onto the sand, Karina has been crying.
So now that I'm standing here, I really don't know how we survive. It's a miracle. Look at this. No one in the outside world would know we are in here. It's nothing but bushes and trees and jungles.
Yeah, that's how we came in. Yeah. That's how the condition pretty much was like.
Yeah. You were both here the same year.
Oh, and actually, we're a few days apart.
Yes. So now we are going to go to the creek, the area where she buried her husband.
We're not just going blindly into the jungle. We're following Karina. And Karina knows exactly what she's doing. Tony and his family remember burying their father by the creek. And she knows of a significant burial site there, where she's found other bodies before. We follow Karina until we reach the creek. The water level is actually knee-high, and we don't know how Tony's 77-year-old mother is going to cross. Some people toy with building a makeshift bridge out of fallen branches and logs. But instead, two men end up carrying her across the river, one at her torso, the other at her feet. And then we're there.
We are walking to the cemetery grounds of the Kuku Island.
This is the very first grave on Kuku Island that we found and excavated. And this is the start of everything else.
Some of the gravesites have large but basic concrete tombs built over them. These are the graves of people whose families have come with Karina and found them. And then there are the graves no one has come back for. It's hard to know exactly what we're looking at. Large rocks are scattered on the ground, and it's unclear which of them are grave markers and which are just rocks.
Yes.
Okay, I need you guys here with me. Yeah.
Today, searching for Tony's dad, this will be the last grave on Kuku that Karina ever looks for. Tony was the one who chose the rock for his father's grave back when he was 18. He remembers he was looking for a big one and that it was triangular with rounded edges. When the leaves and debris and dirt obscuring the graves are cleared, the Liu's start looking for their father. And then, after only a short while...
Remember what I told you? The piece of rock was kind of round and triangle looking. Does it look like to you?
Yeah, it does.
I placed that rock.
You feel certain this is the one?
I'm certain. It's not, never can be 100% certain, but I feel very strongly, yeah.
The rock is big enough to hold in both your hands. It's sitting in a dirt clearing, in the jungle, on an island in the middle of the ocean. It's both momentous, and at the same time, it looks so forlorn. Tony's mom chants over her lost husband's grave. She's wanted to take care of his grave for 40 years. She washes the rock. Then she burns sticks of incense, planting them in the dirt. She places offerings of oranges on the ground. There's no way that the Liu's can know for certain that this is their father's grave. But for the family, coming to Kuku, looking for the grave, and saying a proper goodbye, this is enough. Tony and his brother both have a moment alone with their father. Tony breaks down and sobs. Karina stands back and watches. She's crying too.
I'm sad to see how sad the grave looks. That's what left of a life. He was the man of the family. He brought his wife and children here, and that's all he had.
Before dark, we turn back. We carry Tony's mother across the creek, walk out of the jungle, through the high grass, across the beach, and climb back up on the boat. The next day, back at the guest house, I chatted with Tony about his dad. And he told me that as much as this will help him move on, there are some things he'll never get over.
Sometimes I'm thinking back, if we knew how expensive of what the price we have to pay, will we still make the same decision? Maybe not. In fact, that we were able to come back to this island to see him, it is a miracle. But I would never, never forget the fact that, what if?
As for Karina, it's hard to understand what would make her so willing to come back, time after time again, to this island where she saw so much suffering. When I ask her about it, she tells me it's because of one memory she can never forget.
When we were on Kuku Island, we have no medications. Sometimes I was there at night. I count the number of people who were dying sitting around me. In the morning I come back, I know there would be one or two less of them. And coming back here, I think that's the least I could do for those who die here. And I know that I can come and go. I don't have to be here like them forever.
So it's like you're doing it just as much, or if not more, for the people that you saw die.
I do it more for the deceased than for the living. They are so helpless. And I think the least that anyone can do is to bring their family back to visit them so they know that they are not forgotten.
For The World, Liz Mack, Kuku Island, Indonesia.
Liz's story is an excerpt from the latest episode of Snap Judgment, the storytelling podcast from WNYC Studios. Her reporting was supported by the International Women's Media Foundation.